Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we are opening our workshop, opening to discussion for speakers who'd like to speak on the role of spirituality in the protection and advancement of the rights of Indigenous peoples. Speaker, Oren, start this discussion for us, please.
All right. I'll try. The importance of ceremony. And Indigenous nations and people are consistent around the world. Wherever I've gone, and I've traveled quite a few places, and I find these ceremonies usually related to food, to planting, to seasons. And almost everybody has their understanding. Yesterday we had a ceremony here where we had the four colors of corn. That was what was explained, that those bandanas represented the four colors of corn. And you could say the four colors of people. People, no matter what color they are one family, just like those four colors of corn are corn. But they're different, and they have different duties. The ceremonies that holds our nations together are very powerful, and their teaching elements, they instruct the people how to be respectful of nature and the importance of nature. And how we are dependent, absolutely dependent on nature. We are not in control. We do not have charge. We are dependent. And so one of the ways that our people have been instructed to do that is to these ceremonies. And you'll find these ceremonies everywhere. And when we attend these ceremonies, if we're invited to these ceremonies and we attend these ceremonies, whatever language that is being used at the time for that ceremony, even though we don't understand the language, we understand what the ceremony is doing. So therefore, we have leaders here from around the world that can speak for all of us, just as it was the other day. Joe Diom closed the ceremony for us, but he was speaking on behalf of all of us, and we understood that, and we accept that, and we agree with that. You cannot apply that to the Christian religion. They don't work together. They're very hostile to one another. I really don't understand why that is, but they are very independent of each other, and they're very jealous of who's in their flock, I guess. But with us, it's very inclusive. And so when these ceremonies are performed, they're performed on behalf of the natural world. We have ceremonies for water. We have around the lunar clock, we have ceremonies going on all the time. I remember looking at one of the 75 or 73 volumes of Jesuit Relations, all about our peoples. And in one passage, there was a statement by one Jesuit priest, and he said, "Ceremonies, ceremonies, ceremonies, confounded ceremonies. They have a ceremony when they wake up in the morning, they have a ceremony when they have lunch, they have a ceremony at night. They have ceremonies, confounded ceremonies," he said, "every day, all the time." And he didn't understand. He did not understand why and how important these ceremonies are for our people and for the earth. It's our way of giving thanks. If there is one thing Indigenous people do, they know how to give thanks to the earth. We do that all the time, and we do it good. We know how, and we really do it good. We know how to do these ceremonies. And so when I hear the songs, and I hear the songs of the Hopi or the Pueblos or Cheyennes or Lakotas, you name it, all around, I know those songs and I know what they're about, and I'm very grateful for those songs because they're on our behalf. And they're speaking to nature, they're speaking to the Creator. We believe in the Creator, we believe in the creation. We have absolute understanding of that. We have relations on the other side, even after you pass over. Our ceremonies for the death, the dead feast. We just go on and on. So when you talk about spirituality, you're not talking about religion. And I remember my uncle, Tadadaho, Chief Shenandoah, he says, we don't have a religion. He says, we have a way of life. This is how we live every day. And so that's the way it should be. And so these ceremonies that maybe is being performed by the Kogi in Colombia or Shuar, or you just name the different nations around the world, they're on our behalf. They're not just for them. They're for everybody. They're always inclusive. Our white brothers, our black brothers, all of the people of the world, they're always included. And you don't have to be there because it's being done on your behalf. And so that's why it's so important that holds these nations together. Our nations are built on ceremony. They're built on song. We cannot have a nation without our songs. That's how important our songs are. And in our songs are all of those instructions. And I'm just a runner. That's all I've ever been for this Haudenosaunee. I don't have command of that language as well as I should. I can't do what Joe can do here. That's why he spoke. And I run for the benefit of the nations, for the people. And first, I thought, when they first asked me to take this position, how important it was that I work for the Onondaga Nation. And then as I work for the Onondaga Nation, I realized, no, I have to extend that to the Mohawks and the Senecas and the Cayugas and Tuscaroras and the Oneidas. I said, that's my responsibility. And then I said, no, that includes the Lakotas, that includes the Diné, that includes all of these people. And then finally I said, it includes indigenous people of the world. And now what I see is it includes all the people. We are responsible. We're the only ones that really know how to do this. And that's why it's so important to keep your language. That's why it's so important to keep your ceremonies. And because we're coming to a very, very serious time. We're in a serious time now. And this acceleration of the global warming, or the waters rising and the weather changing, they're not going to allow you to plant. There's times where it could be too much rain or not enough. The extremes are coming. The winds are coming. The fires are here already. They're going to get worse. And so it's our voice. And we were told, as long as there's one to speak and one to listen, one to sing and one to dance, the fight is on. If we're down to that point, the fight is on. So it's up to us to maintain that. So for the young people here, and you're learning about the complexities of political structures and powers, don't ever forget the importance of your home fire. Your fire is at home. And what your responsibility is there. You're always running for your people. And we are running for the next generation, the next generation. 7 generations ago, people looking out for us. That's why we're here today. Now it's our duty to look out seven generations. And we have to teach our white brother. We have to teach him. Otherwise, he's going to carry us to where nobody wants to go. But we'll wind up there if we don't. It's crucial, this particular time. So this meeting of elders and traditional people around the world is fundamental to survival. I believe that we have the only answer to all of that, which is simply to be grateful, to take care of the earth, and to bring balance back. And my question to you, if you want the big question, is how do you instruct 7 billion people as to their relationship to this earth? Because that's how many people are in the world right now. And if they don't understand how they're related to the earth, we're all in a lot of trouble. Done it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I may just take some time, I come from a culture who they say are the oldest living culture on the earth. They date us back to 65 to 100,000 years of organized society. But we say we go a long way back further than that. And I just want to pass on something to this collective here in terms of our culture and our stories. Because our stories start from what is popularly referred to as the dream time. And the dream time for us is a time before time, where the spirit world existed only, and we came from that. And from that, there was an upheaval within the universe, and we say that the universe tipped upside down, and all the plants and the rocks fell off the river, which is the Milky Way, which we call Warrumbull. And when they fell off, the creators, the superior beings, people said that connected the planets, what we call the big rocks that fell off the riverbank, and connected them by strings to keep them in place. Because they say that, our stories say that there will be a time when this universe will tip upside down again and all those things will go back into place. And we have to teach through story, through ceremony, these dreaming stories. And of course, the creation that took place after was the three people, the Baimi and Birangolo, who we call Mother Nature, and Ganambili, who is the caterer and the woman who bore the children and created the life and brought down the elders from the sky to rebuild life on this earth. And this is one of the reasons why when we do ceremony only at night, because we can see both worlds and we can relate to both worlds. Day, we cannot see what's above, and we cannot show our young ones what is above and where people live and where we go back to and who lives there. What we have here on this earth, we say that when people leave here, the great ancestors leave here, during this time of creation and putting things into place, they left either their spirits behind or they left their physical body behind. And their spirits are represented in the sky in cloud clusters or dark spots in the sky. If their bodies are there, we show clusters of stars. We talk about the stars and we tell them where the bodies are, the physical bodies of the people. And then we take them here on the earth and we show them where their spirits are laying here on this earth. And we take them to those places. And so when we talk about land rights and the protection of sacred sites, this is what we're fighting for, to keep those things protected and to look after them, because we cannot separate the soul from the body. And by destroying these places is to disconnect that creation and that what keeps everything in order for us here on the earth. It is important for us at all times to understand that connection and the life cycle. And one of the great, I suppose, experiences I ever had was going to the United States after I became a ceremony man, a lawman in my law, meeting up with an old man in the south of the USA who was a Hopi, and I had the pleasure of meeting and spending some time with an old man called Thomas Biscayo, who I think is now passed on, because he was very old when I met him. And we sat and talked about business. And before leaving, I asked him, where did your ancestors come from, the creators? Which way? And we were looking in a direction towards New York from that country out there in the desert where we were. And he put his left hand up, and he pointed in a northwesterly direction. And ironically, about 6 years later, I was with some elders of my own, and we were out on the river with some young men and doing business. And my senior elder, I looked at the old medicine man, we call him Ringan in my language, and I said, which way did those old people come to create us? And he was looking in the northwest, and then he put up his right hand. And I thought, hang on a minute, that's very interesting, because 6 years ago the other fellow said, put his left hand up. And so I went home and got a map of the earth and put it out and got a ruler, and I thought, I'm going to see where these lines connect. They connect in the Andalusian Islands. And so for us, there is something there. There are some stories there that we need to find out about. I did go to the Ainoa people in Japan, in North Island, and spent some time with the elders there, medicine men, or their shaman equivalent. And we talked about this, and when I asked him about the Andalusian Islands, I'd never seen a man change all colors at one time within a second. And he looked at me and said, where do you come from? And I said, I'm down in Australia. And he said, how do you know about the Andalusian Islands? What do your people talk about? And I said, well, this is where the old ones came to create the life that we have on the earth. And he said, well, now that you're talking about this, he said, next time you go to Europe, you need to have a look at those white folk and have a look at their stories. And I did. I ended up in Germany, in a place called Bonn, and meeting with some Celtic people who were trying to bring back, Germanic people who were trying to bring back some of their old ways and searching for their stories. They took me to a place on this mountain near Bonn, just on the edge of the Rhine River. And they took me up, and then there's this building that's round halfway up this mountain, and it overlooks Bonn, the city. And when they got there, they took me into this building, and I could see these pictures around the wall, these soldiers carrying a woman's body and all that sort of stuff, and spears. And they said, this is the place where Siegfried killed the dragon. And I said, oh, Siegfried. Who's Siegfried? Oh, that fella. Yeah, equivalent to St. George over there. And so I looked at these stories. Next day, they took me to another place, and they showed me where the, what do they call them, the monks or something. Yeah, they built a monastery on top of this building and a cliff. And when they took me there, they took me down a pathway and said, we need to show you something. And when I went past this clump of rocks with two trees in it sticking out, I heard flutes. And I thought I was going mad, because I asked the people, can you hear those flutes? And they said, no, what flutes? And so I immediately turned around and said, well, that's not the place for me. If you can't hear that flute, then I'm not supposed to be at that place. That's not my place to be. And they said, come and tell us what it is, and I can't tell you at this point. Take me back there, because I've seen that picture on the wall of that rock, those rocks and those two trees. When I went back, there was Pan in this picture at that place on that mountain. It was Pan playing a flute between those two trees in a picture. And then I got up higher, and I saw the globe on the earth on the floor. And when I got on up the top and had a look, let back down, there were two snakes wrapped around the earth that connects together. And you see, in my law and in our culture, the snakes are very important to us. And because they protect the dreaming, they protect the sacred places. And it's so important. But I realized when I traveled that no matter where I've went in the world, looking traveling on this cultural journey around the world, every culture that I've found has a snake associated with that story. And I am horrified, having learnt that, then to look back on the Christian Bible and see how they used the snake as the one who tempted Eve to do the wrong thing. And I find this quite extraordinary when I begin to look at these things. And so when we talk about religion, for us, I agree with Brother Oren that the white man got no idea what he's doing when he's destroying Mother Earth. He has no idea of the disasters that he's bringing upon himself. And unfortunately, we as the indigenous peoples of the world, we are going to suffer because of their wrongdoings. And that's why it's more important for us now to step up and take our place in the decision-making, whether it be in the United Nations or anywhere else. I think it's our time to take that lead. We may only be a small percentage of the world's population, but we have the answers, and we have the stories that will give those answers. And I think we owe it to our children and their children, unfortunately, because they're the innocent ones, to step up and take the lead in this and teach people what religion is. And if I may just end on this one point, we heard someone talk earlier about the Bible. I think it was Mike or someone. There was a court case just recently in London, John Anthony Hill case. And in this case, I think the court in England ruled that the Queen is actually signing letters and signing laws against the will of God according to the Bible, because the court decided that according to the lawmaking faculties of the Western society, particularly England, the Queen swears allegiance to God and she gets her divine right to rule from the Bible, from God. And they say in that court that the first five books of the Bible is what creates the power and authority and the structure for the Westminster and Western systems to pass their laws in Parliament. And if the Queen passes laws and authorises laws that goes against the teachings of the teachings of those first five books of the Bible, then she is breaking God's law, the natural law. And therefore, the laws are in fact a crime against humanity. And I think that's another thing that we as Indigenous people should look at and go back to what Constantino said earlier, that, you know, he doesn't understand how they misrepresent that Bible. And I think we need to look at that and step up to the plate. Thank you.
My name is Joe Diome from the Mohawk Nation at Ganawaga. One of the things that I want to add to what the gentleman said about the Bible was that in the Judeo-Christian and also Muslim beliefs, the Bible says that God made the world and gave man dominion over the world. And that gives them the freedom to do whatever they feel like they want to do to the world. And also in 1494, thereabouts, the doctrine of discovery was made available to all of these explorers and thieves that allowed them to exploit any country that they see. And so that thinking permeates all of the, let's say, the Judeo-Christian powers that exist today, who have all the money. So it's in order for us to combat what their thinking is, we have to do, as Oren had said, is to strengthen our own teachings amongst our young people so that they have a good grounding in who they are and what their beliefs are and what the beliefs teach them. Because in our creation stories, it tells us how we're to respect the earth, and the earth is part of our family. And so we have to reinforce that with our children so that they can understand that. And I think, like the gentleman said, was that there are white people in Europe and around the world, and even in Russia for that matter, who still cling to some of the old beliefs, and they're very few, but they still practice the old ways. And those are the people that I think we need to make overtures to and include them in our struggle.
I think we need to remember from that comment that even what we refer to as the white people, which is totally inappropriate as much as it is calling us people and not our populations. At one point in the world's history, they were also indigenous, and they also had their ways that connected to the land, and they suffered the loss of the values in that. And I think we need to remember and remind ourselves and our youth that it's the reason we need to discuss this topic in the course of our work at the UN and strengthening our rights to practice and be who we are, including our spirituality, is that maybe we can provide a safe haven for those who've lost their way to find their way, you know, by working with us in cooperation instead of establishing kind of a polar relationship where we're one against the other. But I think ultimately our world is about saving the world.
Gracias, señora presidenta. Quería contar una experiencia. El año 2009, en el foro permanente, juntamente con Bartolomé Clavero, tuvimos el encargo en el foro permanente de hacer una investigación de relatoría sobre la madre tierra y los derechos. Entonces, por ese mandato me puse a pensar y tratar de investigar qué había pasado con nuestra espiritualidad. Coincido con la mayoría de los hermanos que también yo recibí una educación de respeto a la naturaleza, caminar, por ejemplo, pidiendo permiso, cuando nos acercamos a los ojos de agua, pedir permiso, cuando subimos a las altas montañas, o cuando buscamos plantas medicinales, etcétera. Pero, sin embargo, lo que no existe, porque justamente buscamos a los libros o buscamos a ancianos para preguntar, ¿cuáles son los derechos que tiene la madre tierra? Entonces, esa pregunta quiero formular a los ancianos y ancianas acá presentes, porque como somos pueblos colonizados, hemos pasado por el trauma de la evangelización. Y en la historia de mi pueblo durante el siglo XVI, hemos sido víctimas del tribunal de la Inquisición, que nos aplicó una política que fue llamada la extirpación de idolatrías. Entonces, todo el conjunto de los conocimientos, nuestra espiritualidad, fue considerada como brujería. Los sabios fueron calificados de brujos, fueron quemados, o en algunos casos encarcelados o simplemente deshonrados porque le quitaban la cabellera, o a las mujeres igual los encerraban en las cárceles porque había mucha práctica de relación, de armonización con la tierra. Y entonces cuando hacía la investigación tuve que acudir a libros de antropólogos, entonces ahí aprendí, por ejemplo, que los pueblos amazónicos, porque es la única vía que a mí me quedaba, los pueblos amazónicos consideran, por ejemplo, que las selvas son es su familia, los árboles son su hermano, porque fueron creados con los árboles o salieron de los árboles, que no es simplemente salir y buscar plantas o cazar animales o pescar, sino que la selva o que los peces tienen un espíritu protector, así como también, por ejemplo, los humanos tienen un guía espiritual, los peces también tienen guía espiritual, así como los hermanos aquí, el Chuar está presente, consumen yagué, una planta sagrada, también los peces consumen yagué y no se puede pescar en cualquier momento. Entonces, leyendo aquello, yo empecé a pensar en las enseñanzas que tuve durante la niñez, y exactamente eso también tuvimos en los Andes. Pero ¿qué pasa cuando nosotros somos educados, adoctrinados en la religión? Y ahí tenemos un trauma, porque aquello parece que no es algo que nosotros debemos hacer caso. Entonces, yo creo que así como los ancianos han hecho mucho esfuerzo por establecer un lugar aquí en Naciones Unidas, luchar por nuestros derechos humanos y también por los derechos políticos, creo que debemos ahora darnos el tiempo y pensar en la espiritualidad y concretamente en los derechos de la Madre Tierra, porque creo que los pueblos indígenas hemos tenido la capacidad de agendar un tema en el contexto internacional, cuál es que la Tierra es un ser vivo, que la Tierra no está hecha, como dice la Biblia, para sojuzgar, sino no para dominar, sino que la tierra, en el caso nuestro, los andinos y los amazónicos, es nuestra madre, porque nosotros hemos salido de algún lugar de la tierra. En los mitos de creación que tenemos, salimos de una montaña, unos otros salen de un ojo de agua, de una laguna, de un río. Somos hijos de la Madre Tierra, por ejemplo, cuando nuestros antepasados fueron obligados a trabajar en los socavones, en las minas de plata de Potosí, se llamaba a la mina Coya, y Coya quiere decir reina, es la parte más sagrada que tiene la mujer, es nuestra madre. Pero sin embargo, hoy tenemos las industrias extractivas que arrasan con nuestras montañas sagradas, y la minería se ha vuelto una maldición para nosotros. Entonces, otra vez lo que quería yo proponer a los ancianos y ancianas acá es pensar en los derechos de la Madre Tierra. ¿Cuáles son los derechos de la Madre Tierra? Ya no solamente trabajar en el ámbito de los derechos humanos, porque si pensamos en los derechos de la Madre Tierra, creo que tenemos mayor efectividad en proteger nuestros derechos y proteger nuestra vida. Gracias, señora presidenta.
I really like that question about what are the rights of our mother. This thing that invaded our lands is a very old thing. It goes back 18,000 years. And my brother, the late John Mohawk, looked at it, and this is something we did in the early years when we were the young guys. When we created the Indian Studies program at the University of Buffalo in 1970, we said we created it for the purposes of us studying them and obtaining the funding that was available for quote-unquote Indian Studies. And so we spent our early years, we looked at them. And this ties to this question, what is the rights of our Mother Earth? What we found, when you go back that far, that this thing that's called Western civilization that came to our world and did sweep across Europe and destroyed the original beliefs of the peoples in this part of the world too. It began in the area that's the Tigris and the Euphrates rivers, Afghanistan, Iraq, that whole area, but in Iraq. And what happened? Well, we come to understand, and I will say that we as indigenous peoples are the only ones who can look at this history and understand what really happened back then, because we still have non-Western languages that allow us to understand the thinking and the beliefs that those people had at that time. And the people living by those two rivers were an agricultural people. And they believed that the earth was female, just like us. They believed that water was male. And so in the springtime, with the annual floodings of the Tigris and the Euphrates, they saw this as a cosmic sexual act between the male water and the female earth that produced life. And so they planted on the floodplain. But what we found in their culture, and this would be the first violation of the rights of our Mother Earth, was that the human men created a conspiracy with the male water to rape and dominate the female earth through the creation of irrigation. That the cutting open of this female entity and forcing the male water into her and further into away from the floodplain so that they could control the birthing cycle of the world, of their world at that time. And how traumatic of a cultural change that had to be. There is no way in any of the Haudenosaunee languages, as a matriarchal culture, that we can talk in our language about the cutting open and the rape of our mother, the earth. We can't even have that discussion. But those people did. And when they did, and it was done by the men, the whole of their spiritual, cultural, linguistic, everything, tradition changed. And all of the female spirit, high spirits were demoted to less than the male spirits. And so begins the formation of this angry male god hovering in the universe, ready to strike down anyone who goes against him. That's the beginnings. That's the origins. It begins with the deliberate male conspiracy between human males with the water male to rape the female earth. So that is the first violation of the laws of the rights of our mother, the earth. And it is the beginning of exactly what we have today, of this huge capacity of that civilization to rationalize and justify the destruction of anything because they say they have the approval of their God. Now this culminates, this is going on for a while. And so all the stories that they made up back in those days to rationalize this behavior, to legitimize this behavior, are finally compiled into a book. And that book come to be called the Bible. And it's a series of stories written by human men. There are no female authors in the Bible. Everything, Old Testament and New Testament, all written by men. And it's written by men rationalizing their place, that their perceived place in the universe. But even them, you weave into here, and I'm going to talk about it more tomorrow, people like Aristotle and Plato and Socrates also play a role in the creating of this mindset that we're up against. The ability to create the papal bulls, the ability to create the doctrine of discovery, the ability to create the dominion of man over the world, starts with that first irrigation ditch that they dug in Mesopotamia. And they created the desertification of their own land that used to be a green land there, that used to be a very lush and beautiful land. And yet they did not learn about the consequences of going against the universal law. That's the origins of it. So it's not just about them being Christians or Islamists or Jews or whatever. It's this long tradition of being that way. And we have to understand they've been at it for so long, it's on autopilot.
Gracias, señora presidenta. Espero no excederme, por favor. Quiero compartir brevemente mi experiencia personal en este camino de la espiritualidad a partir de mi experiencia dentro de la comunidad. Me enrolé muy joven dentro de la tradición espiritual de mi pueblo. Mi abuelo fue sabio de la tradición, depositario de la espiritualidad, a quien conocí muy pequeño, yo tendría 3 o 4 años, apenas tengo una imagen visual de él, pero mi padre heredó la tradición espiritual de mi abuelo. Y entonces yo me enrolé cuando tendría 15 años, es decir, durante 50 años yo he sido, digamos, parte de esa tradición espiritual. Es una tradición que se desarrolla dentro de esta concepción de las 7 flores. Y las 7 flores son el maíz y sus amigos, los productos que se dan en el campo. El frijol, la calabaza, el chile, tomate. En conjunto, pues, es el maíz y los frutos que sustentan al ser humano. Y mi padre murió hace 8 años. Después de él murieron otros ancianos de la tradición. Y de un año para acá, yo soy ya el anciano de la tradición de mi pueblo. Y coincidentemente, cuando me llega la invitación acá, también ya soy un anciano. Y entonces digo yo, ¿y qué hay que hacer ahora? Afortunadamente, de unos 5 años para acá, se incorporan dentro de esta tradición espiritual, dentro de mi comunidad, personas más jóvenes, por lo menos 15 o 20 años más jóvenes que yo. Y entonces ahora estamos como recreando esta tradición, porque tenemos la preocupación de cómo transferir, de cómo heredar este camino de la espiritualidad a los jóvenes. Los jóvenes que poco a poco se han alejado de la tradición y están más metidos y entretenidos en el mundo de las tecnologías, ¿no? De la informática, en fin, de todos estos avances tecnológicos en materia de comunicación. Y tenemos, por otra parte, la presión de la iglesia que descalifica ¿no? Toda esta práctica espiritual propia, y que la escuela ignora también, digamos, esta parte espiritual de nuestros pueblos. Y entonces, yo lo que digo, para no extenderme mucho en este tema, que necesitamos, pues, renovar el camino de la espiritualidad, fortalecerla, porque es lo que nos va a permitir ser nosotros mismos. Que cada pueblo siga viviendo su visión del mundo, sus valores a partir de su propio ser. En este caso, mi ser náhuatl, mi ser azteca, mi ser mexica. Y entonces, yo termino retomando la pregunta del hermano Carlos Mamani, en el sentido de cuáles son los derechos de nuestra madre tierra. Es un cuestionamiento que hago propio, porque yo digo y me respondo a mí mismo, ¿no? No es que tenga la respuesta para Mamani, para el hermano Mamani, pero sí un cuestionamiento, y me digo en un primer momento que uno de los derechos fundamentales, pienso yo, y me respondo a mí mismo, es que nuestra madre tierra recupere a sus propios hijos. ¿Por qué? Porque los hijos andamos extraviados justamente por esta persecución desde la colonia hasta nuestros días por parte de la iglesia, por parte de los misioneros. Y entonces yo creo que este derecho fundamental de que nuestra madre tierra recupere a sus hijos, pero no solo a los seres humanos, sino también a los árboles que tienen vida, a los pájaros, a las flores, en fin, todo el entorno natural que conforma y que integra a nuestra madre tierra. Y entonces, si la madre tierra recupera a sus hijos, ¿no? Entonces, los hijos, nosotros, ¿no?, en armonía con todo el entorno natural, podremos seguir cantando a nuestra madre, seguir danzando para nuestra madre y seguir ofreciéndole, entregándole ofrendas con flores, con frutos, en fin, con todo el regocijo de nuestro corazón. Y creo que de esta manera nuestra madre podrá encontrar otra vez la armonía entre ella y nosotros, porque habrá recuperado a sus propios hijos. Muchas gracias.
Gracias, muchísimas gracias. Y una vez más espero la paciencia de los hermanos. Yo creo que hemos tocado un punto muy importante al discutir sobre la espiritualidad. Yo no sé si realmente habrá espiritualidad en la parte invasora. Yo no entiendo, porque aquí toda la vida se dice Dios mío, Dios mío, y para todo es Dios mío, que si Dios quiere, porque era la voluntad de Dios. Pero nunca hablan de Satanás. Satanás simplemente está calificado como el malo, nada más. Pero hagamos un análisis aquí. ¿Quién es más malo? No, aunque no sabemos dónde estará. Pero ¿quién es más malo? ¿Satanás o Dios? En definitiva, considero que Dios es más malo. Porque por algo será que Satanás se ha calentado, se ha enojado. Y ha empezado a hacer la guerra a Dios. Algo malo ha debido cometer, por eso se ha enojado Dios, ¿no? Y Satanás se ha enojado y le ha dado la oposición. ¿Y quién hizo la maldad? Dios agarró la espalda o los puños, las patadas, y lo botó justamente a este planeta, según dicen, ¿no? Entonces yo considero que Dios es mucho más malo que Satanás. ¿Y por qué no dicen Satanás mío también, no? Deberían querer mucho a Satanás. Pero ahora, tomando en cuenta toda esta situación, a mí me extraña mucho cuando En mi lugar, en mi pueblo, yo soy aymara, y en este lugar que se llama Bolivia, porque su nombre verdadero es Collasuyo, tenemos lugares sagrados al que en aymara, en quechua, decimos huaca. Ahí, a nuestros lugares sagrados, dicen Satanás. Por ejemplo, hay una pista que entra a La Paz y las radios, la prensa, todo el mundo dice, un medio tipo curvites está sobre una pista y hay nuestros hermanos, hermanas, van a hacer su ceremonia y todo el mundo, la prensa, la parte occidental dice la curva del diablo. Y ellos dicen están adorando a Satanás. Bueno, nosotros no entendemos quién es Satanás, quién es Dios. Pero dicen eso, nos calumnian, diciendo que estamos yendo o estamos adorando a Satanás. Para todas estas cosas, nosotros habíamos pensado en un tiempo, si mal no me recuerdo, hace 5 años más o menos, hemos hecho un desafío a los religiosos, europeos. Hemos invitado a este famoso Obermayr, que es alemán, ex guerrero criminal de la Segunda Guerra Mundial en Alemania. Él es alemán, ¿no? Y se hace el cura, pero sin ser cura. Pero todo el mundo reconoce que es cura porque habla de Dios. Entonces, a él, después a un tal arzobispo Jesús Juárez, al máximo de ellos, el presidente Abasto Flor, y luego al cardenal Julio Terrazas, que ahora sigue siendo él, el más o menos considerado directo representante del Papa, ¿no? Y a los pastores en general, hemos alcanzado un documento indicando que, bueno, hagamos una discusión, un foro debate, cristianos versus vivencia cósmica telúrica. Demuéstrenos y nosotros les demostraremos también lo que nos corresponde.
We have several speakers.
I believe that this question posed about the rights of Mother Earth deserve a good answer and response from indigenous peoples. I would ask whether or not the language of rights is the appropriate language to use in relation to the responsibility we have to respect the law of nature as well as the protection of the earth. Some governments, and there is a move within the United Nations to institute rights of Mother Earth. But in using the language of rights, there is that whole issue of the duty bearers and the enforcers. And in some of the countries that have already used this, for example, in Ecuador, the government is the duty bearer and the arbitrator of these rights of Mother Earth. And they are now using this against indigenous peoples, against some of our very basic, long and traditional practices by saying that these practices are against Mother Earth. Therefore, I think we really need to study whether that is the appropriate language we should be using and how in our reaching out to the environmental movement and the realization that we are in a crisis, whether or not we will follow the current move to call for a law against ecocide and the rights of Mother Earth, or what will be our response and the teaching and sharing that should come from indigenous peoples in respect to this current movement. I think we do need to think about it because indigenous peoples are now being persecuted very much on the basis of the rights of Mother Earth. For example, in Asia, our practice of rotation agriculture that involves burning is being called a crime against climate change, and the fines being imposed on our communities for this so-called crime are tremendously high, and we are the ones being put on the dock for our practices, which in fact have managed these areas for generations.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we have somewhat of contradictions here. I think we did get into a lot of the bashing of Christianity. I think if we made a show of hands, I think everybody almost in this room was baptized at one time. Myself, I was baptized 3 times. So on one hand, we have to tell a truth about Christianity, but the question is not whether or not we believe in the Christianity. The question is, what is the role of spirituality? To me, the role of spirituality in our movement gave us a foundation. It gave us a weapon against colonialism, to give us our identity back of who we are, to fight against the idea of the cultural ethnocide. This was a term that was, brought into acceptance by a professor that was here in 1977. His name was Robert Jolan. He's from the University of Paris. And so I want us to, like my friend said, after we had a session like this at one of our movement conference, and he says, Bill, he said, I don't want to be a white man no more. Could I just be a non-Indian? So the role of the spirituality has really brought us to who we really are. It's not important whether a Christian flooded the Euphrates. I think the importance is we have our identity back of who we are. And so I think that to answer the question, when we were looking for identity as a movement of the American Indian movement, we went back to some of our traditional people. And through that, then we began to understand the process of colonization. The role of the church was to be the intelligence of the military. Before the computers, they only had to bring in the missionaries to decide who's not going to church, who's not getting baptized, who's going to prison. That was the role, another role that the church had. But on the other hand, the church, for example, in the hanging of 38 of our people in 1862, some of the ministers prevented, there was really 380 people that were sentenced to hang. But it was the ministers stepped forward to save over 300 people. So sometimes, and we had the mission schools on our reservation, they taught us the English. They taught us to compete in this world. So on one hand, we have two friends who are Christian. We have some people who played an important part in our communities in the issue of survival. So I don't want us to get into the bashing. I don't want to get us to bashing of all the white men's, because it's up to us to determine who we are. And most of us was baptized, and now we have some people who get spiritually drunk, as Crow Dog used to say. Once they find their self, their identity, they want to be a shaman right away. They want to start giving Indian names. They want to have a Sundance for white people in Germany, these type of things. So these are the role of spirituality has been to give us our identity back, our foundation for a movement that truly represents the people and the history of our people, not to deal with the Christian. That's another argument. Okay, thank you. Bilama Apollo.
Good afternoon. I'm really, interested in this discussion that we're having this afternoon. And the reason is because it's very important where I come from, the role of spirituality in our rights. Whenever we talk about our rights, whenever we talk about our treaties, there has to be a prayer first. There has to be a ceremony. And our elders, and I think we need to remember this. When the people first came here in 1977, there was ceremony that preceded that. One of my brothers, he's no longer here. He carried a pipe through these doors here. And back again in 1981. So I think we need to remember that as being very important in our movements as Indigenous peoples. I think we need to realize that our ancestors, the ones that gave us the instructions to come to this place, this house here, we need to remember the very strict instructions that they gave us as far as the protection of our rights, the protection of Mother Earth, the protection of our future generations. And that's one of the things that concerned me. And I know that it's very difficult to convene and to do the logistics of this kind of a gathering. However, I think it would have been nice if that could have been included, the pipe. And I don't think it's too late. I think when we have those ceremonies, I think it really focuses us on why we're here. And that's for the rights of our people at home that cannot be here, and the rights of all those that cannot speak for themselves. And also, I think the ones that we're here for is our children, our grandchildren, and some have great-grandchildren. I'm not there yet. When I first came to this place, I was a very young person, but now today I have grandchildren, so I think about them. And I'm not far from being a great-grandparent too, so that's what's really important here, not about who knows more about this religion or that. I think we need to go back and focus on why it is we're here and what got us here in the first place. Thank you.
Okay. In summation, I would like to say the last two comments I'm in extreme agreement with in terms of the work that we're doing at the United Nations, and I think we should all really think about it seriously. We've all had some sort of extremely negative experience in whatever tools they used to colonize us, whether it was intellectual or physical. We suffered much loss and much pain. But our Indigenous movement in the last years and years of work to heal that and move forward is, I think, very important for us to express to the youth that we're talking about now. And recognize that the strength in us keeping our spiritual practice and ceremonies at home is that we bring them with us. You know, in our ways, a lot of people misunderstand Sundance and call it suffering and pain and mutilation and things like that. And it's really about sacrifice for your people, to heal them and make them well. When I listen to, and it gets me emotional, about the youth and being homesick, I think they're sacrificing for our people. And that's what we can't forget. You know, in terms of spiritual practices, we get too serious sometimes when we're talking about in a political arena, you know, and we've been told to separate our hearts and our souls from that. And we have to recognize that our hearts, people with good hearts come in all colors, all shapes, all forms, many different backgrounds. So we ally ourselves and we strengthen our hearts and our homes and give room for the people who are still searching to have a place to come home. And that's part of where we need to teach our children. How do they carry it with them wherever they are on our Mother Earth? Or even if they happen to become astronauts and leave our Mother Earth for a minute. We need to give them our spiritual ceremony that they can carry with them wherever they are. You know, and you know, many of us, I'm a big crybaby, so I've cried over and over and over these years. But it's the children, you know, are losing that. We need to computerize our spirituality. We need to give them access in their technology for our spirituality. We need to have our ceremonies, you know, in ways that they can turn on an app, a computer app, when they're home and homesick and away from home, and connect back with us. So we know that our one heart, it's kind of, I don't know if everybody's seen the movie Avatar. That tree and the roots carried that spirit to everybody, and everybody connected with that. And I think those are the kind of things we need to think about how in this work we incorporate and maintain the heart of who and why we are here and what we're about. And eventually, like I mentioned yesterday, it may take us a 100 years, but that's where we need to change the world back to where it was, where it cherishes our Mother Earth. We have one item of business. You have what is your comment?
Sí, gracias, Presidenta. No, son 30 segundos. He escuchado con mucha atención este tema de la espiritualidad y los pueblos indígenas, y a veces creo que nos confundimos. En mi concepción, no soy autoridad ni cosa por el estilo en este campo, pero en mi concepción y veo la confusión que se hace a veces entre espiritualidad, religión y esto. Yo creo que tenemos que partir del hecho de que la espiritualidad es algo mucho más allá que religiones. Eso tiene un profundo significado. Es la vida, la conciencia, o no sé, algo muy profundo. Y no debemos confundirlo con las religiones. Tal vez ahí viene el conflicto que a veces se comete o nos enfrascamos pensando que las religiones sustituyen la espiritualidad. Yo no lo veo así. Para mí es mucho más allá. Y lo veo con las prácticas en nuestros pueblos, de los líderes espirituales. Y también me tocó verlo en un encuentro de líderes espirituales en la India. Y me di cuenta, más reafirmé mi tesis de que la espiritualidad es algo más allá que las religiones. Las religiones han sido un arma que han usado la cultura occidental para frenar, para calificarnos de salvajes, de demonios, de diablos y de todo, ¿no? Pero quería aclarar esto porque yo así lo veo, que es algo más allá que las religiones. Gracias.